Hey there,
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica, and this is All Things Sensory by Harkla. Together, we're on a mission to help children, families, therapists, and educators live happy, healthy lives.
We dive into all things sensory, special needs, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and so much more. In each episode, we share raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for everyone to implement into daily life.
Thank you so much for joining us.
All right, procrastinators, are you still doing your Christmas shopping?
Probably.
We want to remind you that this week is the last week that Harkla can guarantee your products will get to your house on time with our free standard shipping before Christmas.
If you didn't already know, shipping is crazy this year. So we definitely recommend getting your shopping done as soon as possible.
So head to harkla.co/holiday to take advantage of our free shipping and make sure that you get your products in time for your kiddo to unwrap on Christmas and be very, very happy and very calm and organized.
So once again, that's harkla.co/holiday, harkla.co/holiday.
All right, let's jump into today's episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of All Things Sensory by Harkla. This is episode 182, and welcome if this is your first time listening. Welcome back if you are a lifer. We're glad that you're here with us.
Yeah. Okay, so today we're going to talk about auditory hypersensitivity. So first, we need to talk about the auditory system and how the auditory system works.
I think, too, we should break down the different terms that we interchangeably will use.
Yes.
During this episode and when we talk about this in practice as well. So auditory, you said auditory hypersensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
Could be auditory sensitivity, could be over-responsive to auditory input.
Could be auditory defensiveness.
So there's a lot of similar terms, but any of those terms that we use today, they mean the same thing.
Yes. Okay, so the auditory system is how we hear noises in our environment. And basically sounds are energy waves that move through the environment into our ears. And then these sound waves travel through our ear structures, through our inner ear structures. Then they're transmitted to our brain where we process what the sound is, what it means, where it's from, how loud it is, and then our brain processes an appropriate response.
Basically, we want you all to realize the difference between just what you hear and then processing what you hear and having an appropriate response to what you hear, the sounds you hear, the level of sound that comes into your brain.
Yeah, we're not talking about hearing loss.
No.
That is something completely different. It's not within our scope of practice, hearing loss.
Yeah.
So we're talking about auditory processing.
Mm-hmm. Processing what is coming in. So we want to talk about what happens when a child's auditory system isn't working correctly.
Yeah, so when the brain doesn't process those signals appropriately, the brain gets overloaded with too many sound signals and the brain doesn't know how to respond to a specific sound signal.
Mm-hmm. So one term that we hear often, if you haven't heard it before, that's why you're here, but the term is auditory processing disorder. So this is when the child can hear just fine. They don't have any hearing loss, but their brain doesn't process the sounds, specifically speech sounds, when someone is talking to them.
Yeah, and this does require an official diagnosis, and there's a lot more that plays into auditory processing disorder, but just briefly, yeah, that's what it is.
Can I share a side note of a story?
Of course, always.
Okay, so I was doing my presentations at the college yesterday, mm-hmm. and after the second one, a girl came up to me and was like, well, during the presentation, we were talking about auditory stuff, and she's like, yeah, I have auditory processing disorder.
Mm.
And so we were talking about it a little bit. She came up afterwards and was talking about one of the activities that we were doing, the stop, walk, wiggle, sit activity,
yes.
and how I switched the instructions.
Yep.
And she was like, I couldn't do it. Like, I could not process it. I couldn't figure out what to do, how to do it. And she said, I was so lucky to have early intervention and get diagnosed. She's not from here, which is probably why she got
slam on Idaho.
I'm sorry. But she was just so appreciative to have strategies and tools to be able to process. She also said having masks on makes life way harder for her.
I can just imagine.
Absolutely.
The sounds are muffled. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great example of auditory processing disorder, though, for sure. Okay, so now that we understand what auditory processing is and kind of how it works, obviously we didn't go into a lot of scientific details. If you really want to do that, you can do some research online. So let's talk specifically about auditory hypersensitivity when the brain cannot process certain sounds, which causes adverse reactions.
So hypersensitivity, defensiveness, overstimulation, over-responsiveness. It can look like a child who has a meltdown every time the vacuum or blender turns on.
Can be a child who has a fight or flight reaction to the bell ringing at school every single time.
It could be a child who can't tolerate being in noisy environments. They show social anxiety. They have meltdowns anytime it's time to go out in public.
The one that comes up for me when we think about that is the pool, because most indoor pools have so much echo and it's just very, very overwhelming.
Do you remember when I was doing swim lessons with Trip?
I do.
Was that your example?
Yes. Well, and even me just going to like the YMCA with my kid, you know, it's so loud. It's overstimulating to the auditory system. So if your child has been in swim lessons and they've shown anxiety going to swim lessons, that's definitely something to take a look at is the sound factor.
Yeah. It can also look like a child who covers their ears during an activity that is not too noisy for anyone else, like flushing the toilet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think about like the public restrooms.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. It could look like a child who can't focus on a task because of the sound of something in the room, say the overhead fan or even the refrigerator humming. Mm-hmm. Sounds that no one else in the room notices, but this child cannot focus because of that sound.
So it can also look like a child who can't focus on a conversation because there's other noise nearby. This is me. Mm-hmm. If someone is talking to me and I can overhear another conversation, I cannot focus on the first conversation because I'm like, well, what are they saying over there? I can't tune it out now. I can't stop listening.
Yeah. Yeah. Or is that just because you want to eavesdrop though?
It's a little bit of both. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Especially if that other conversation is more interesting than my conversation.
Sure. For sure. For sure. Okay. So it can also be a child who can't sleep because of the noises in the house that are too loud. So this is going to be even after you've made sure that there's no extra noise, the TV's not on, music's not on, maybe you even have like a sound machine on, but the child can hear the house creaking or they can even hear the electricity running through the house. We call those EMFs, but that's a whole other topic. But if your child's struggling to sleep because they complain it's too noisy, could be a sign of auditory sensitivity.
Yeah. So that's a lot. But one thing to note is that kids who experience this auditory hypersensitivity, they can often have similar hypersensitivity to other systems, like their tactile system or vestibular system, but they can also have under-responsiveness to different senses as well. So just because they're over-responsive to auditory input, it doesn't mean that they're going to be over-responsive to everything.
Yeah.
Most people have mixed responses.
Yep. Okay, so some of the adverse reactions, including what we just mentioned, can look like meltdowns or tantrums.
A fight, flight, or freeze response.
Social anxiety and covering ears in public places.
Mm-hmm. Poor attention and focus.
Challenges completing daily tasks such as eating, brushing teeth, going to the bathroom, showering, getting dressed, sleeping, all of those daily routine tasks.
You can see crying or refusing certain tasks.
Anger, aggression, aggravation, just being cranky.
Mm-hmm. You can also see a child shut down or elope or like run away from the situation.
These are all signs of just overstimulation from auditory input. The brain can't process what's coming in. And so the child has to have some sort of reaction. And it's not an appropriate reaction, but it's all they can do in the moment.
Yeah, I definitely have some auditory sensitivities, and I can tell you I get frustrated and angry when I'm overstimulated.
Well, we all do, I think. Mm-hmm.
But to auditory input,
well, specifically,
especially.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to remember, too, that if your child has an adverse reaction one time to an auditory, to a sound, doesn't mean they're necessarily sensitive to that sound. It has to be something that happens every single time.
And it significantly impacts their ability to get through their day, like their ADLs, brushing their teeth, going to the bathroom, showering,
school, social situations,
playing at the park, going to soccer practice, when they blow the whistle at soccer practice.
That is pretty loud.
Yeah. If your child experiences this, or if you're starting to notice that your child has some sensitivities to auditory input, here are our recommendations.
This is why you're here.
This is the rapid fire activity strategy.
So we always say rapid fire, but we never actually do rapid fire anymore because we always explain.
I know.
So we try to do rapid fire, but I feel like it's not really rapid fire.
No, we have to. We'll do a disservice if we don't explain these.
But I still like calling it rapid fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, first one, The Listening Program by Advanced Brain Technologies. You guys, we talk about this company, this program all the time. We've been using it for years. There are other therapeutic listening programs out there that are great and work well. This is just one that we have found. We love the company. I use the program myself.
We interviewed the creator.
Mm-hmm. They're awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're great. So that's going to be the first one to check
out. Let me quickly explain what it is. It's acoustically modified music that helps retrain the brain to work on not only the auditory sensitivities, but speech and language and executive functioning and creativity and focus and behavior and sleep. So all of the important things that we want to work on. It's like a workout for your brain.
Something else that you can try is over-the-ear noise-canceling headphones. So these are great to use at home. Especially if you're going to vacuum, your child can wear the noise-canceling headphones while you vacuum or while they vacuum if it's their chore. If it's socially appropriate, they can use them out in public. And this is a good one, too, during sit-down focus tasks like homework. Over-the-ear noise-canceling headphones can be great to drown out all of the other noise that's in the environment so they can actually focus on what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Hey everyone, we gotta take a quick minute and share some exciting news with you.
We are doing a brand new challenge that starts in January.
We're calling it the 30-Day Primitive Reflex Challenge.
We're gonna focus on 4 of the common primitive reflexes. Each week will be a different primitive reflex, and we're gonna show you different activities to complete.
The challenge will be hosted on a private Instagram account, and it's only $5 to join.
We're going to have demo videos. You're going to get freebies. It's going to be on Instagram. So we're also going to have stories and live videos. It's going to be amazing.
Yes. You'll also get a special discount for our full Primitive Reflex course after you've completed the 30-day challenge with us.
So since you're ready to sign up and join us for this challenge in January, you can go to the link in the show notes or go to our Instagram at All Things Sensory Podcast and join via the link in bio.
Okay, let's get back to the episode.
So going along with that one, if you have over-the-ear headphones, you might want to pop in some calming music. Out in public, it's, you know, socially acceptable to have headphones on, earbuds in. Everyone just walks around these days with earbuds in. It's kind of annoying, but it's normal. It's typical. It's cool. It's the cool thing to do.
Yeah.
But you could include this as part of a 504 or an IEP for the kiddo at school, especially where they're completing tasks that need focus. And it's not like during a lecture, obviously.
Yeah. Okay, so we love activities with the metronome, and metronome activities are great for a variety of reasons, but they can help with some auditory hypersensitivity, and it just helps process auditory information better. It helps the brain understand the auditory input that's coming in, and it can also help with focus and attention as well.
Yeah, that rhythm is so beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, another one you can try is a white noise machine. Mm-hmm. There are some awesome ones on the market these days, but just having that in the background can be really helpful. So another one that is a little bit odd is humming. And I just feel like it's a great tool for a kiddo to have in their back pocket if they are feeling overwhelmed by auditory input. They can hum and it will kind of drown out the noise that's bothering them or the background noise that they can't focus. They can hum and focus on that noise instead of the background noise that's overwhelming for them.
Totally. So also incorporating more auditory input into play activities. So a good example here would be using like playing a drumming game. You know, if your child is doing a drumming game and they are in control of how much sound they're making, you can come in and take a turn and make different volumes of that sound to help them learn to modulate different volumes.
Mm-hmm. One like holiday game I remember doing is putting like different bells in boxes.
Oh yeah.
And then like, you know, put one bell in this box and then three bells in this box, seven bells, and you have to shake the bells and listen to the different sounds that they make and try to identify how many bells are in each box.
Yeah. Another one that we've done before, I think you came up with this activity a long time ago. It was a Halloween activity and you made a CD with Halloween sounds.
Yes.
I know it's past Halloween by the time this episode comes out, but you could do this for anything. It doesn't have to be holiday specific, but make a CD or find YouTube sounds of different sounds and play them and have your child identify what the sound is.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
Yeah, have them imitate the sounds mm-hmm. as well. So just incorporating more auditory input into play activities helps the brain process and understand auditory input.
Yeah, I remember doing like a creaking floor.
I just remember you made like pictures with
yes.
it.
Well, having them draw the sounds would be a cool activity
so
too.
So good.
So another one would be heavy work because that proprioceptive input is the all-regulating, all-grounding input that helps to override that overstimulation.
Mm-hmm. Going right along with that would be chewing gum or using a chew tube or chew item of some sort. You're getting a lot of proprioceptive input through the jaw with these activities as well.
Visual schedules.
We have a whole episode on visual schedules.
It's weird to be thinking about a visual schedule when we're talking about the auditory system, but hear me out. A visual schedule lets the child know what's expected. And maybe they're at school and in their 504, or maybe they don't even need a 504 accommodations for this, but the teacher lets them know that there's going to be a fire drill mm-hmm. today, or the school bell is going to ring, right? So you can put on their visual schedule, math, recess, fire alarm, lunch.
Mm-hmm.
So that way they can see what's expected of them and they can know, okay, I need to be prepared. I'm going to put my headphones on, yada, yada, yada. And they'll have a little bit more control over the unexpected.
Definitely. I think using visual schedules to identify how loud a certain environment is going to be could be helpful as well. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to the grocery store, maybe you have a specific picture that says it's going to be a medium sound at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you go to the pool, you have a symbol that says it's going to be really loud at the pool. So they know where they're going and they can know to anticipate how loud it will be in yeah. that particular environment.
And then they could also have a visual with some of their different tools mm-hmm. for them to choose from. So you can have a little Velcro strip with headphones, music, humming, chewing gum, and they can pick which one they want to do.
That's actually what I was just about to say was teach your child these strategies. So teach them, if it's appropriate, teach them that they hear sounds differently. You know, teach them that their brain thinks that some sounds are too loud and that's why they get fearful.
What did we hear? Lori said this, name it, claim it, and tame it.
Yes. So don't shy away from it, right? Teach your child that this is how their auditory processing system works. This is how their brain processes auditory information. There's nothing wrong with it. All it means is that we need to have some strategies in place for those environments and those sounds that are triggering.
Mm-hmm.
And teach your child the strategies, have them available as a visual schedule, have them available in the car, at school, but giving your child some control and also having your child choose what makes them feel calm because everyone's different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if a child has a fight or flight response to the loud auditory input at the pool, do they know three things that they can do to help themselves feel calm and regulated?
Mm-hmm. I love that. Last one is having a designated spot for brain breaks and sensory breaks. And it's important to agree upon these and plan these breaks and these places out before the child becomes overstimulated. Because if there's anything you need to remember from this podcast, it is so hard to have a conversation with a child. It's so hard to reason with a child when they are in that shut down, overstimulated mindset.
It's impossible, I think.
Yeah. So plan it out. That's why we say use visuals. Talk about it beforehand. Talk about it when they're calm. And as few of words as possible when they are overwhelmed. Show them the visual, let them choose, let them have control over how they calm their body down. I would be pissed if someone was telling me what I have to do in order to calm my body down. Like, it's not your body. You know, it's my body.
It would not work.
Right?
It doesn't work.
And these kids love to be able to choose these activities on their own and to have that independence.
Well, they need it. Yeah, they need that control, especially when their environment is out of control and causing them distress. So yeah, having a designated spot for those brain sensory breaks and a calming place, like whether it's the car or the bathroom or, you know, when you're out in public.
Yeah.
Identify, okay, if you get overstimulated from all the noise here today, what are we going to do? Where are we going to go?
I've got a body sock in my backpack. You just climb on right in.
That sounds like a perfect idea. Okay. So hopefully some of these were helpful. Hopefully you got some new ideas. We'd love to hear from you. If your child struggles with auditory sensitivity or if you struggle with auditory sensitivity, what are your strategies? What helps you? Let us know. But don't leave yet. Don't leave yet.
Don't leave yet, because we have two questions that we're going to answer from Instagram. And one of them, I think, is very connected to this episode today.
It definitely is. Yeah. So we got this question in our DMs, and we messaged her back just because we wanted to help her on the spot. But then we thought this would be a good one to talk about on the podcast for anyone else who maybe is struggling with this as well. So our dear friend, our listener said, are there any suggestions for a parent who is triggered by their child's stims?
Now, stims can be different for every child. If we're going to talk about this as it relates to the auditory system, if the child's stimming, maybe they yell or they scream or they spin something that makes a lot of noise. You know, the parent could be overstimulated. I say overstimulated rather than triggered because I'm assuming that's what's going on.
Could be. Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm thinking is the situation, right?
It could be. She didn't specify.
Yeah. So suggestions for her, it's kind of like the oxygen mask thing again, right? I know. It comes
up. It's so true.
Being able to have tools in your back pocket to regulate your body as the adult, your brain, maybe you need the listening program, but taking that time to take care of yourself and to fill up your cup before you help your child. I can't like give too many suggestions because I don't know exactly what the child's stims are.
You got to really personalize. I think you have to figure out why you're triggered, why you're overstimulated by it. When we first got this question, my initial thought was like almost like a PTSD triggered response. Mm-hmm. So my suggestion was seek out some therapy for yourself, some counseling, because if it is like a PTSD response and you're going into fight or flight and you don't know what to do, it could help to talk to someone about that. But if it is just your sensory system becomes overstimulated by what your child is doing, then identify which sensory system is becoming overstimulated and identify strategies for that.
We do have a podcast episode about parenting and PTSD and how challenging it is and can be having a child with different abilities, trying to parent them and knowing your history and just having that traumatic response anytime something comes up.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's a good question.
Yeah.
That's such a good question. I'm sure that there's a lot of other individuals, parents, therapists, everyone who can identify with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So our second question was, my child is a year old. He sleeps on his stomach, so I never noticed anything. But in the car, he was jerking awake a lot, kind of like the Moro response. So the question here is, my child still have the Moro reflex?
So one thing I want to point out is when the Moro reflex integrates, it doesn't mean that we don't startle to anything ever again. We all transition, well, we should transition from the moral reflex to a more mature startle reflex.
We all startle at sudden noises or sudden movements. It's a very natural response.
It keeps us safe.
Mm-hmm. So without more specific details on this, it's really hard to say. I mean, were you driving over a bumpy road? Was there a loud noise that jerked him awake?
Is this the only time that you see that startle response in the car when you're going over bumps? Like, can he see out the window or does he have a screen on the window? So maybe adding more visual input so he can see where he's going would be helpful.
Yeah, definitely a hard one. But I think that we can't assume that he still has a moral reflex just because of this one situation. Because it could just be a typical response.
Yes. And he's 1 year old, so it is a little bit more challenging to like formally test mm-hmm. his moral reflex.
I think what you could do if you really want to know is you could grab a therapy ball, sit him on a therapy ball, and gently, slowly roll him backwards over the ball so that he's laying on his back and going upside down over the ball. He might not like it the first one, two, or three times, but if he starts to tolerate it and enjoy it, then that moral reflex might be integrated. But mm-hmm. if he screams and cries, hesitant, doesn't like it, hates it, just like,
is rigid in his body.
Yep, you can tell he's just having a big adverse reaction to moving into that position. The moral reflex might still be there. I say might because
anything is possible.
We're not diagnosing. If you want us to answer one of your questions on the podcast, send us a DM, let us know. I do think that answering your questions on the podcast is helpful because guaranteed there are other people with these exact same questions. So we would love to answer your questions on the podcast.
Yeah. If you could leave us a review on iTunes, that would be fan-freaking-tastic. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Just pop in there for a minute and leave some stars, leave a comment, let us know.
Leave 5 stars.
Yeah, that's all I have.
You could even just say, I left 5 stars because Jessica told me to. Like, that's fine. That's totally fine.
I have to listen to Jessica.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's it. That's all we have for you today. We will chat with you guys next week.
Okay, bye.
Thank you so much for listening to All Things Sensory by Harkla. If you want more information on anything we mentioned in the show, head over to harkla.co/podcast to get all of the show notes.
We always have the show notes and links, plus full transcripts to make following along as easy as possible for everyone. If you have follow-up questions, the best place to ask those is in the comments on the show notes or message us on our Instagram account, which is @harkla_family. If you just search Harkla, you'll find us.
Like we mentioned before, our podcast listeners get 10% off their first order at Harkla, whether it's for one of our digital courses, one of our sensory swings, the discount code SENSORY will save you 10%. That code is SENSORY. Head over to harkla.co/sensory to use that code right now so you don't forget.
We're so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Just a friendly reminder, this is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, and sensory integration. We do not know you or your child, therefore we do not know any specific needs. Therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist for more information.